Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the show. This is the Damage Report. I'm Johnny Arola. We're still under lockdown. You know what that was? Partially it was joking, but partially it was when I go to intro this show and then press this button to bring up Brett. Do you know what is almost always true? It's Friday.
It's Gucci Mane. Oh.
But it's not. It's Thursday. I briefly had the beginning of the lifting of the weight, and then I realized, no, I'm still holding that for another day. So, welcome to the show, I guess, Brett.
It's worse because you started a day late into the week. Mm-hmm. I have a very practical producery question. Is Gucci Mane distracting? Is having Gucci Mane not only in the one shot, but in the two shot distracting? And is it a better or worse plan to put Dwight, you ignorant slut?
Well, that word isn't visible.
Yes.
It is distracting to people. They always ask what those pillows are.
Gucci Mane.
Yeah.
It's not an Albie. That's not a Band-Aid. It's an ice cream cone.
100%. Okay. So there is about a million things that we're going to be talking about on the show today. So much. Some super serious stuff. Probably pretty obvious what we'll be starting off with. At the end of the show, though, we have not one, but two new ads from the Lincoln Project, a thing that I now look forward to, which is sort of weird because I almost certainly disagree with virtually everything that those people say and think and would want to do, but I like their ads, and we've got two, hitting both Trump and also Mitch McConnell in a really interesting way, so we're gonna have a little bit of fun with that. Anyway, everybody who is already in the chat, thank you for joining us. What I'm doing today, as we're following this, is I always follow the live YouTube chat. I'm also following the Twitch chat, so I can see the comments from the Trashy Plays and
Bunny452 recently modded, definitely using the hype command, mm-hmm. which is, I dare Haas to sue us for using that emote, which is 700 janks with giant mouths.
I don't even know what it is.
it's just jank going.
Okay, I don't know what caused it, but we'll see. And hi, Daddy Pie. Okay, that's weird. We're also getting super chats and tweets. And so thank you for sending in all of those. We'll be reading them throughout. We're going to try to be fast with it because we've got literally so much content that we have to get to. Really fast reminders that we are indeed on Twitch. The show is live right now at twitch.com/TYT. Later on tonight at 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern, I believe, Brett and I are going to be doing an hour-long special where we'll be doing live commentary on Cenk Uygur's recent interview with Senator Bernie Sanders. We'll be answering your questions and comments and having a little bit of fun. There might be drinks. I don't know. I'm just making that up now. But Brett, I do look forward to that.
Yes, and Garbage People is tomorrow, for those of you asking in the chat. Anna will be on tomorrow to do Garbage People. And Francesca Fiorentini will be on the Happy Half Hour. Wow. We're playing a game called What the F is Happening Here? And we have a new segment called Totally Normal People, where we show people being totally normal, pointing guns at their genitals while driving very fast.
That's a good story. That's gonna be a fun episode. Everyone's definitely gonna want to watch that. Yeah, I felt so we had to do a little switcheroo where Brett would be on the show today and Anna would be on the show tomorrow, and I did briefly think, like, should I ask Brett about Garbage People? But it does have to be on Friday. What are you gonna do, you know?
Yeah, that's when my garbage comes too. And I think, wife, garbage comes tomorrow, they bump it by a day.
Okay,
sorry. You anyway, started late. This isn't on me.
I understand that. No, oh my God, we're 8 minutes late. We got like 20 stories to get to. What are we going to do? Okay, everyone, buckle up. The news is about to hit. And despite all the jokes, it's going to start off in kind of a serious way.
I think America must see that riots do not develop out of thin air. Certain conditions continue to exist in our society, which must be condemned as vigorously as we condemn riots. But in the final analysis, a riot is the language of the unheard. And what is it that America has failed to hear? It has failed to hear that the plight of the Negro poor has worsened over the last few years. It has failed to hear that the promises of freedom and justice have not been met. And it has failed to hear that large segments A white society are more concerned about tranquility and the status quo than about justice, equality, and humanity. And so in a real sense, our nation's summers of riots are caused by our nation's winters of delay. And as long as America postpones justice, we stand in the position of having these recurrences of violence and riots over and over again. Social justice and progress are the absolute guarantors of riot prevention.
So that there is obviously King's speech. It is specifically the other America. I've seen that shared pretty broadly on Twitter today, and just wanted to put it out there. Obviously, there are protests going on in a number of different cities. You've probably seen video footage. Some of it described accurately. There's already a massive amount of misinformation that has been spread far and wide. Sometimes in just sort of the natural chaos of these situations, you get things wrong. In some cases, I have seen the biggest stories coming out of some of this being intentionally, maliciously lied about by right-wing grifters, journalists on the right wing. They're lying about things that are going on. And so I just want people to try to understand the situation, understand some of what is underlying this, and also understand that while we can look at some of this footage and see, for instance, maybe fires or something like that. And obviously, everyone is against that. We have to say that, even though it's the most obvious thing in the world. You should bear in mind that there have been reports from other protests in the past about, you know, police munitions and things like that, flares setting fires. It is possible that some of that could be responsible. There are opportunistic criminals that flock to things like this that don't necessarily align in any way, least of all ideological, with the protests that begin these sorts of events. And so just understand that, and understand in another way, like, I know that Tucker Carlson had a show yesterday about how this is a threat to all of American society. Understand that, people acting out and, you know, doing this sort of thing, this is how America was birthed. It was birthed through protest, sometimes violent, the calculated destruction of property, those sorts of things, that has been in our DNA since the very beginning. So these are just things to bear in mind during all of this.
Yes, and a man was killed because a police officer put his knee on the man's neck.
Yes.
And that is something you also have to bear in mind as the news cycle develops. What are the motivations of the people choosing to put focus on various aspects of the story? And just as Donald Trump would rather talk about Joe Scarborough than talk about the 100,000 Americans who have died from coronavirus, mm-hmm. many in the media would rather talk about a Target store than a man who seems to have been targeted because he was black and treated no better than the car he was next to on the ground. Yeah. And so that's what we need to focus on. And these events come a lot has happened in America that has led to the feelings that everybody has relative to the principal news stories like police brutality. And I just, it's super hard to take Tucker Carlson seriously when he throws things like that out there. Mm-hmm. Especially when something as grave and unfortunately prevalent as police brutality resulting in the death of someone who did not deserve it. I mean, if you look at George Floyd, he was a white collar criminal. He was a counterfeiter, in the mind of the cop of whatever
the
allegation is, yeah. Right? Like in the worst case scenario, like maybe he wasn't the guy. I mean, people aren't certain that he was actually doing the things that someone was accused of doing. But even if that is the truth, even if he was the person who was paying with a counterfeit bill, why is he on the ground with someone's knee on his neck?
Yeah. Yeah. And I would just like you mentioned the hypocrisy there with Tucker. I saw good old Tommy was criticizing this. And which was, I don't think he should have, the Daily Show had her on and shouldn't have done it. But one good thing that did come from that was that Trevor Noah pointed out that, I mean, the same sort of people who are criticizing this, and I think lots of people will probably agree with him and not understand that these same people also said that other sorts of protest, for instance, silently taking the knee, that too was unacceptable. The range of things that make it so that your concerns don't have to be paid attention to is the entirety. That's all it is. If you want to protest and have it be acceptable, you need to do it silently. You need to do it out of sight. No one should hear it. No one should see it. That is it.
Their priority is not having a cogent point based on their value system. Their priority is their power and their money. And that's it. And that's why they make the arguments they make. And that's why those arguments are so all over the place and don't hold together from start to finish across different news items. Yeah. It's because they just want to give their followers 4 words to say in a row to absolve themselves of having to think about it any more than that while still feeling right about stuff.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I started with that video. Because, you know, in the full run of the speech, he talks about this is anger and frustration and lack of faith in a system that has been boiling over and boiling over for so, so long. That video was decades ago. So everyone just try to bear that in mind. And be careful who you trust in their news on this, because there's already a lot of misinformation out there.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it, "You must unlearn what you have learned." And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today. And get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
Democratic state legislator in the Pennsylvania legislature, Brian Sims, had a live stream last night where he revealed that members of the Republican caucus there had apparently tested positive for coronavirus and not told their co-workers on the Democratic side and potentially exposed them to the virus. Take a look.
Chip. Learned that for as much as a week, perhaps longer, that House Republican leadership knew that at least one of their members had tested positive for COVID-19, that other members who'd been exposed to him would eventually go on quarantine, but they didn't go on quarantine until they were done serving alongside us, especially those of us that serve on the state government committee. So for those of you that know, the Pennsylvania House of Representatives, under our gerrymandered Republican leadership, has been perhaps the most active state legislature in the entire country. And during that time period, during the entire COVID-19 crisis, the state government committee has been the place where all of these up bills to pretend that it is safe to go back to work have been going. And every single day of this crisis, the state government committee in Pennsylvania has met so that their members could line up one after one after one and explain that it was safe to go back to work. It was safe to go back to race car driving or dog grooming or getting your hair cut. Meanwhile, what we're learning is that during that time period, they were testing positive. They were notifying one another and they didn't notify us.
Okay, so we're gonna have a little bit more on that, but he was very mad. I would be very mad. I think we can all understand where he's coming from.
Yeah. You're getting people sick on purpose and you're hiding the truth from people. But, and I know that while you're a Republican in a state legislature, like that's normal for you. This time there's actual palpable immediate consequences for that. Mm-hmm. Like That's what it is. That's what's so frustrating for me personally. And I hear it in his voice. It's just the gall of these people. And that's the powerlessness you feel when a system has gone awry and it's completely been unmoored from specifically like the tenets that folks tell us that we hold sacred in this country, when really they don't.
Yeah.
They gerrymandered the district. He already feels powerless there. And then he finds out that these folks have been lying to him about having it so that they can force the state to reopen. That is sick. And it's even more frustrating because you just kind of had that feeling that something like that would happen. But your better instincts to give people the benefit of the doubt probably said, no, that would be a bridge too far for them. And it turns out it wasn't.
Yeah, I mean, I remember back early on when Trump had been exposed to it, we had debates about would he ever admit it if he actually had it, or would he just pretend that he didn't. I didn't really think about all the other levels of people who might not admit it. And we hear about, like, you know, there were the hairdressers who apparently had symptoms. I don't know that they necessarily knew that they had it, but they did have it, and they had symptoms. They had reason to believe that they had it and potentially exposed, like, 140 different people. But the people in the Republican state legislature there, they knew it. I mean,
but like that instinct that you have is to say, all right, I don't know for sure. I'm not going to act as if it is for sure. And that's the difference between like the Trump doctrine and the reasonable, decent person doctrine is in the
Which
reasonable
I call the John doctrine,
the Dr. John, we call it Dr. John music reference. But in this situation, he always sings like this. I think he's dead. So anyways, weird. but Trump will act as if, like, with voter mail-in voting, they're acting as if it's all completely fraudulent, and they just proceed as that, and that people will do that. When you're like, no, you have to give me evidence before I buy into that argument. No, the Republicans, they don't do that. They just go ahead and we need to act as if maybe that if they have it. If that Trump absolutely has had it and will have it, and if he hasn't had it already and will not tell us about it,
yeah,
then because that's all I can go for, because I can't keep giving this guy the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, and Brian Sims, like, imagine what you would all think. Those of you watching this video, what you would all think if you found out that I had tested positive and decided to go to work at TYT. Like, what would you think about me as a person?
That's knowing. I mean, that's it. Like, knowingly is in every criminal case.
Yeah.
Knowingly. Did you knowingly endanger someone? Did you knowingly commit this crime? And yeah, he knowingly. They absolutely knowingly did it.
Yeah.
And
so do you want a response?
And they should be held responsible. Yeah.
So the person, one of the people involved in this, Representative Andrew Lewis, Republican, said in a Facebook Live address Wednesday night, hours after he publicly announced he had tested positive, that he informed as few people as possible about contracting the coronavirus because he wanted to protect the privacy of those around him and because he was only in close quarters with a handful of House colleagues. He said, "It's mostly ghost town here. I only interacted with a couple of people. I did what I needed to do to protect their privacy. They've had time to get their test and all those things." That's BS. So, first of all, it doesn't become moral again if you only expose a few people potentially to a potentially lethal virus. And also the idea that, like, sure, I could have protected your life, but I did you one better. I protected your privacy.
Well, I Nobody did. No, that. But I did you one better in that I didn't protect your life.
Oh, yeah. That's he eventually it. Also revealed it. So.
That's it. It's you did it.
That's true.
That is not a excuse. That's admission of guilt, bud. Mm-hmm. You decided not to tell people, even though you knew you had it. And you don't know how this is transmitted. And everyone needs to go into the same damn building, idiot. Yeah. And at the very least, like, maybe and we should find these solutions. Like, that when they go after mail-in voting, like, that's the solution. All these things are the answer.
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that. Yeah, people are asking, I see, is it illegal to do this? I don't know. I'm not sure if there's a precedent. It seems like it should be.
I didn't sue all the people who knowingly gave me STDs in college.
Jeez.
I didn't follow through.
You know
on
how
that.
We react when we see the video of someone in a supermarket coughing on a person who works there because they don't want to be asked to have a mask or spitting on them or something? And the joke there is, I could have it, and we get outraged. This person knows they have it. So much worse.
And yeah, that's the rule of goats, which we talk about on on a happy half hour this week. Even if you're ironically having sex with a goat, you still had sex with a goat.
That's true. That's true. I was going to bring that up, actually. But anyway, yeah. And so bear in mind also that Brian Sims, the individual you saw, which we're going to play another one of his videos in just a second, apparently donated a kidney earlier this year, and so is thus immunocompromised himself and hypothetically at greater risk of dying from coronavirus, probably part of his reaction. I want to play just a little bit more of what he thinks should be done now that we know what we know.
First of all, Mike Terzai, the Speaker of the House, needs to resign. And any member of leadership that has known what was going on, any member of Republican leadership that knew that members were testing positive, that other members were being quarantined, and did not tell those of us who were exposed to those members, needs to be investigated by the Attorney General. And I think that there needs to be prosecutions. I'm in a building right now surrounded by members that can't go see their kids, that are having to call their husbands, having to call their wives and saying, honey, I might have exposed you and everybody I love in this world because one of my colleagues tested positive, but he was protecting his family, but not protecting mine. And Republican leadership protected
him. And just like the instinct or the reason that they stayed there, and also the reason that they stayed in the session, was to pass laws. Mm-hmm. To further endanger people. They lied about the dangers so that they could open up the economy and put more people at risk. And if you're, and usually it's like when you see a doctor scrub in before a surgery, you're like, oh, this person takes it seriously. Mm-hmm. This story is like you're about to go in for surgery and the doctor takes a handful of poop and a cheeseburger. And starts like all over the place and is like, all right, scalpel, that's what just happened. And that's why he's so upset. And that's and you would want what? You would want that doctor to lose their medical license. And he wants these legislators to lose their positions as legislators. And he's absolutely 100% right.
Yeah, there. I don't know that there are legal remedies. There 100% should be. You can't willingly expose someone to a virus, lethal or not, but especially lethal. You can't do that. And imagine if it was the other way. Like some Democratic representative knows they have coronavirus, goes up and shakes Trump's hand. What do you think Sean Hannity would say that night? What do you think Lori Graham would say? Honestly, what do you think? Anyway, I understand his anger. Brian Sims and others there are now worried about the possibility that they have it, that they expose their family to it, feeling entirely manipulated and lied to. I understand that feeling. The misinformation flowing around mail-in voting continues, and in particular, misinformation about individuals pushing for less mail-in voting who themselves have taken part in it quite a bit. Kayleigh McEnany, who has been attacking the practice in defense of Donald Trump and his lies on social media about it, turns out that over the last 10 years, she has voted by mail 11 times. Seemingly, every time she's had an opportunity to vote, she's chosen to vote by mail. And that was brought up during a recent appearance on Fox News.
About mail-in voting. The Tampa Bay Times is reporting that you've cast your ballots, I believe, 11 times by mail-in voting. So why is it okay for you to do it? I understand you're traveling, you're in a different city, but how can we be assured that your votes were counted accurately, but when other people do it, it's fraud?
The president's been very clear. Every American is entitled to vote the way that I did. If you are someone who's working out of state, but your domicile is in a different state, you are absolutely entitled to request an absentee ballot and to cast your ballot by mail. I'm entitled to that. The average viewer watching is entitled to that. The president has no qualms with that. He's for absentee voting for a reason. What he's not for is mass mail.
So we already know that Trump has voted by mail, and we'll have a little bit more on that. Now, it turns out that she always votes by mail. It's totally fine. He's totally supportive of that. What he's not supportive of is mass mail-in voting. Remember? Because that's you guys. That's the masses.
Right, the mass. Doing it. They want you to go. They want you to have to choose between exposing yourself to coronavirus by waiting in line and the other option, not voting at all. Mm-hmm. That's perfect for them. Republicans do better when fewer people vote, period. Because Republicans, like Kayleigh McEnany, will find a way. they have the extra means by which to solve that problem. And other folks who are being put in the line of fire by going to their blue collar jobs, where it's more likely that they will expose themselves to coronavirus, are also being put in a position where they will more likely expose themselves to coronavirus by having to go in person. The solution is voting. The same way for Kayleigh McEnany. I'm not there. I need a solution to vote because I don't want to go wait in line. She could go. Kayleigh McEnany, you could have gone home to vote.
Yeah.
You telling me Kayleigh McEnany, who her grift has made her rich beyond her wildest dreams, can't, if she really cares about this, go back to wherever the F she's from and vote? BS. Also, Trump is one that I do think is fraud. Like, Trump doesn't live in Mar-a-Lago. Mm-hmm. Trump lives in the White House. But he wants that. Every vote counts in Florida. Yeah. So he wants to vote in Florida. So, yes, in that situation, that's the one essence. That's the one instance of voter fraud that I can prove.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And look, it might be too much to say that in any particular election, like the most recent election, because the last time Kayleigh voted by mail was way, way, way back in March. How about this? You couldn't have gone home any of those times. 11 times you couldn't vote in person. My, you are a busy individual over the last decade. No, it was convenient. And you want voting to be convenient. And I want voting to be convenient for you and for everyone. That's what I want.
Yeah.
And for both her and for Trump, she keeps saying absentee voting. She tweeted about that. Absentee voting has the word absent in it for a reason. It means you're absent from the jurisdiction or unable to vote in person because she wants you to believe that it's some special circumstance that she and Trump, they were forced into. But that's not what it is. In Florida, under Florida law, all registered voters are permitted to vote by mail. That is simply the way it is. And they know that many Republican states, red states, have massive universal mail-in voting and have for a long time.
Utah,
exactly. The reddest place in the, more red than the core of the sun itself. And they know that. And that's, but the thing is, it must be nice to be on that side because your arguments don't have to make any sense at all. You don't even have to scratch the surface to reveal the hypocrisy and the ludicrous nature of the argument. Your finger gets close and it's like abundantly clear.
The words you need to say are like 5G.
Yeah, and that's it. Like,
that's all it is. It doesn't even need to be the four words to get out of thinking free. Mm-hmm. It's voting by mail is fraud or 5G.
Yeah.
Fake news, Russia, China. And that's very, very concise, effective marketing, but it makes America a very crappy, ineffective country.
Yeah. To be fair, you can't just say Ukraine. You have to say Ukraine, 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 or Russia, Russia, Russia. You have to repeat it three words, like with Beetlejuice. One added layer of ridiculousness, the argument that she has provided and Trump has provided for why it was okay for him to vote by mail without it being a big fraud or a big concern was that he lives at Mar-a-Lago, even though, as Brett pointed out, he doesn't. He lives at the White House. That's sort of the point. Also turns out not to be true. Trump was in Palm Beach County, where he's made his Mar-a-Lago club his legal address for voting purposes on March 7th and 8th, the first weekend of early voting for the March 17th presidential primary. He didn't leave until Monday morning, March 9th. He was there for 2 days and could have actually voted in person. Now, to be fair, it would have been inconvenient because the closest place that he would have been able to vote was across the street from his home. He drove past it more than six times. He just chose not to. And so if that is the level of inconvenience that justifies voting by mail, that you would have had to get out of your car, then I think everyone qualifies under that, especially during a pandemic, and we should all be allowed to vote. We are on the side of people participating in American democracy. They are very clearly not. That cannot be repeated often enough.
It's like Charlie Kirk recently was like, they want everyone to vote by mail, and they, in doing so, they want to steal this election. It's like, no, you just, he literally says like, everyone would vote and that would steal the election. You guys don't even, do you hear yourselves?
Yeah.
You're saying that if everyone gets to vote, it's stealing. No, if everyone got to vote, then the Democrats would win. which means in the meantime, what you've been doing is stealing.
Yeah.
Lesson. We're the smartest. We're the best.
Yeah, we're trying.
They're the evilest, and they're bad, evil people. They are evil, true. Though. They're evil, right? They're evil. This is evil. This is what evil people do, is they go out in the public and they say wanton lies that have no basis in reality and don't reflect their actual beliefs. Mm-hmm. That's evil, because they're going to a nefarious personal end against the public good, right?
Well, that the lies are intended to hurt people, that probably qualifies. And if not, the fact that the lies are intended to hurt people and make them richer and more powerful when they are already themselves the most well-off people in American society, if that doesn't qualify for the label, I don't know what plausibly would. Kellyanne Conway is backing up Kayleigh McEnany in the defense of Trump's indefensible comments about mail-in voting. Here is what she had to say.
Five states in the country, including Utah, perhaps one of the reddest states in the country, that vote entirely vote by mail. So if it works there, why shouldn't it work in other places?
Well, it works there for many reasons. I know Oregon, I think, was maybe the first state to do that many years ago. It also, I think mail-in balloting often favors incumbents because other people, maybe not at the presidential level.
Republican or Democrat doesn't favor one party, right?
Well, that's not necessarily true. It depends who's in charge.
Favor Democrats in Utah.
It depends who's in charge. But again, why are we presuming 5 months beforehand that people predominantly or exclusively are only going to want and be able to vote by mail?
So, God, there's a lot that's wrong there. So she tries to pretend that mail-in voting is a scheme put in place by the incumbents. And when the reporter points out, okay, so then is that true in the red states that have been doing it for a long time? And she's like, no, it depends. It depends. Okay, what does it depend on? She doesn't know. She's not going to say.
It depends on who I want to win.
Exactly.
That's how I'm going to change my argument.
And what position I've been forced into defending that I have no personal stake in and didn't think I would have to be commenting on. Because that's what the job is.
The best solution, according to how we should make America work, is to make it as easy for people to vote as possible. Mail-in voting doesn't even do that. Mail-in voting favors people with homes, mm-hmm. Everything about it, in my opinion, would favor Republicans, except for this one factor, that having more people voting ahead of time, no matter what party, would alleviate the line situation the day of voting. And that's the only way.
Which will help people who live in areas that have lines, which is not rich areas.
Like, everyone technically has an address, theoretically. But like, it just never really works out for Democrats to do something like voting by mail. It just doesn't. Mm-hmm. There's nothing about it that screams out to me other than alleviating lines, which are predominantly the problem in more densely populated areas at the polls.
Yeah. Yeah, and people who have an inability to take the time off to be able to go, if you don't, especially if those two things are both true. If you work multiple jobs and don't have much time and live in an area that's probably going to have long lines, it would be nice to be able to vote by mail and vote early. Other claims that she made there, why are we just assuming that lots of people or the majority or everyone are going to want to vote by mail? Well, that's a good devil's advocate. Because of the pandemic, 100,000 people have died. People are understandably skittish. But the thing is, we're not even assuming that everyone or the majority are going to want to vote by mail. We're not forcing them to do that. We're trying to make it available for them to do that. What's being sent out are applications to vote by mail. If people don't want to do that, if they still want to wait in line, as we'll get to, she has an analogy about that, they're perfectly able to do that. She doesn't care. She doesn't care at all about what she's saying. We have to engage with it because we're serious people, but she's fundamentally not. Let's play your clip.
People are very proud to show up and go to the polls. They really are. I mean, they wait in line at Georgetown Cupcake for an hour to get a cupcake. So I think they can probably wait in line to do something as consequential and critical and constitutionally significant as cast their ballot.
Okay.
You know you're gaslighting people when your argument is people wait in lines and it's good. Like, you're trying to get people mm-hmm. to buy into the I should wait in line for an hour for anything argument.
Mm-hmm. And if you're not willing to, then you clearly don't like it.
And everything's wrong with that.
Well, one thing that's wrong is that right now, Georgetown Cupcakes in D.C. is delivery only. Why? Because it's a goddamn pandemic going on right now, and also, lots of people are dying across the country.
Also, they call Democrats the elitists. Mm-hmm. This dumbass, the one, hey, what's my metaphor that she grabs for is mm-hmm. a freaking cupcake shop on M Street. A boutique cupcake shop in one of the highest class shopping areas in all of DC. That is a fancy place right outside Georgetown University. It is, three blocks from K Street where the lobbyists hang out.
Yeah.
You gotta be kidding me.
God. It's not like, I don't know what an analogy would be. Like some stand that sells Frito pie in Bandera. I don't know. It's not like you're waiting an hour for that. Come up with something. They can't even pretend to not be elitists. Anyway,
The other thing she said was she made this statement, and I actually want to pull it up because it is fantastic. This was her actual quote. Next, it's online voting. Then pretty soon, we're just going to have DoorDash and Uber Eats deliver everything we need, including our ballots. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. Well, also the post office does. We don't need for that. But yeah, things are being delivered.
Her argument is it should be as impossible as possible to vote.
Yeah. Yeah, the argument, and really fast, the argument she's saying is you should care enough to wait in line for an hour because it's constitutionally significant and all of that. First of all, you would never ask, and you don't need to ask rich individuals to do that because they can vote by mail if they want to or absentee, and they certainly don't have to wait an hour or 4 hours or 8 hours to vote. But that theoretical underpinning, the idea that if it's significant, you'll wait, can be used for all sorts of things. Okay, so if you should wait an hour, why not 6 hours? Why not have to pay $100? Why not have to take a test to prove that you care? If it's so significant to you, why not do all of those things? Well, we know that they want to throw up barriers. That's all it is. They're trying to gild an obstacle. That's the only thing that she's doing there.
And Kellyanne, why are you doing this? You've been replaced by Kaylee.
Totally.
You have Kellyanne. Sorry, I mixed you two up. Kellyanne, he doesn't love you anymore. He doesn't want you anymore. He's moved on to the younger version of you from Tampa.
Yeah, which is awful, but also how he thinks.
No, but
really,
Kellyanne.
That's what he does.
Kellyanne, you owe him no allegiance. Wouldn't it be amazing if you switched sides right now? Wouldn't it be such a... If you defected... right now, wouldn't that really stick it to him? Because he's moved on. He owes you no allegiance. He isn't acting that way. He doesn't talk about you. He puts Kaylee McEnany front and center. It's time to join us.
Yeah.
Your husband has.
Yeah, that's true, but I don't want her.
Sort of.
I'm good. Yesterday, the U.S. Formally passed the 100,000 deaths threshold. It was a tragedy before we reached that. It's a more obvious tragedy now that we have. And many people, although not all, have acknowledged that milestone. Here's an ad being released just in the last day by the Lincoln Project about that.
And again, when you have 15 people, and the 15 within a couple of days is going to be down to close to zero.
Close to zero. Close to zero. Close to zero. Close to zero. Close to zero.
Paid for by the Lincoln Project, which is responsible for the content of this advertising.
Okay, so we left on that last little bit, just in case Trump sees this. We want him to know who it is that is attacking him, because it drives him absolutely insane.
Abraham Lincoln is attacking him.
Exactly.
The rats are eating each other.
Exactly. So that's like the Never Trumper group of Republicans who've had a number of different really effective ads. We're going to have another in a moment. This isn't necessarily my favorite. He is such... Trump is so ridiculous that when you do the thing to his voice, to me, it undercuts it a little bit. I don't know. Do you disagree?
It should have gone higher pitched.
Definitely not that.
It should have, I think. I mean, honestly, that's how I would have. I would have at least tried it and seen if it sounded better.
Okay, well, someone at home, please make that for Brett. He'll love it. But yes, It's 100,000.
And 100,000 people.
Almost nobody acts like it's 100,000.
And if you should have gotten? There's an Eddie Izzard bit about this very thing where it goes from, you know, one person dying is a tragedy, but the literal line is, you killed 100,000 people? You must get up very early in the morning. It's almost impressive, you know?
I think it might have been about Pol Pot. I don't remember exactly, but I do love Eddie Izzard. And if you get them to acknowledge it, which in many cases you won't, Fox was not covering it yesterday. They don't care, or they don't want you to care at the very least. They will respond by saying something like this. Comment from Kaylee McEnany, who said, I think, you know, Dr. Burks said it best when she said that in their estimates, they had anywhere between 1.5 million and 2.2 million in the U.S. To be under significantly that high mark shows that the president did everything in his power and helped to make this number as low as humanly possible. As low as humanly possible? There's nothing.
What percent?
There's nothing we could have done to make it a little bit lower? 10% lower? No. 20% lower? No, it's obvious. If we had locked down, we would have saved tens of thousands of lives. We've done that a little bit earlier. And that's just one thing. We could have done many other things. He did everything in his power. The best America could have possibly done is 100,000 and counting.
And by his own metrics.
World where we could have done better.
She just basically is like, what's a bigger number than that? And has anyone ever said it?
Yeah. Well, okay. And we knew this, by the way. Like, when those numbers, the 1.5, the 2.2 million came out, we were saying at the time, they are going to use this to make anything lower than that will be fine. Will be a huge accomplishment.
Listen, the reason the Lincoln Project made that ad is because these are devastating for the president, these terms. 100,000, 15, down close to zero, and bleach, Clorox, UV light. Like, that's who we're dealing with. And they just need to just carpet bomb the entire, every possible airwave with stuff like that. Because that's the truth. The truth is, like, we're done. Trump was fine. My personal, like, appraisal of the situation was that no one that we really needed would step up against Trump unless there was an actual crisis, like an actual palpable crisis. Because it was all funny money. Everybody was like, my stock market portfolio is doing fine. I'm not going to actually care. My job is fine. I'm not going to actually care. And these are just like the folks at the upper echelons that you kind of need to push for stuff. And would you get enough people who are in the middle to say, all right, this dude, it's real now. And this couldn't be more real. He's trying really hard to make you think that it's fake. And that's the through line on everything for Trump, is everything out there is fake. Nothing they're saying is real, but 100,000 people are dead.
Yeah.
And in the meantime, Trump earnestly looked to Dr. Burks and said, we're going to look into injecting people with disinfectant. That's the person we have in charge.
Yeah.
And it's fine if we're like we're out at a barbecue and he's planning it, whatever. But we are in the middle of a global pandemic and 100,000 people have died. And his approach right now is to delegitimize voting and to focus on one death, which is someone who worked for Joe Scarborough a while ago.
Yeah. So he does care about one death, apparently.
100,000 people. 100,000 one deaths.
Yeah, I would say that this does make the voting stuff make a lot more sense. If I had done what Trump has done, I would be trying to make it as difficult as possible for people to vote. That seems like the only solution to his problems at this point. 100,000. He's done everything humanly possible. So, by the way, like I love to give credit where I can to the mental flexibility and fluidity of the conservative mind. That they will listen to Kaylee McEnany there and say, oh, yes, on the one hand, Trump did everything humanly possible and 100,000 people still died, but that's way better than what could have possibly happened. And also, man, I love Tucker Carlson when he comes on every night and says the lockdowns weren't necessary and they probably made the whole thing worse. So what should we have done exactly? Absolutely nothing. You're saying we should have done absolutely nothing, but also he did everything humanly possible and deserves credit for it, and we shouldn't have done anything that we did. But it's great that we did everything. Because it would have been worse, but we shouldn't have.
But not just that. There's like an uptick in the places that reopened. Also, they're pretending that states that are under more stringent lockdowns aren't trying to reopen, which they are. That is actually happening now. And then they're saying, then they're complaining that the lockdowns are too stringent because the numbers are low. Well, the numbers are low because we did stuff about them. And who led in all those efforts? Was it red states who, by the way, do have the benefit of not typically being like the main points of entry for people traveling from other countries?
Yeah.
But or have high population densities that put them at higher risk. But no, those blue state leaders are the ones who were like, here's how we should do it because the president's not a good leader. Yeah. And when Biden made that ad saying that Trump was a deer caught in the headlights, that was an amazing ad because he was. He was a deer 100%. Caught in the headlights.
He made the bet that it wouldn't be that bad. That
and his point, over. Yeah, he's looking like, who made that car, China?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely insane. 100,000. We're going to reach one American losses in World War I in the next 2 or 3 weeks. Because it's 100,000, but it isn't over. But let's acknowledge that. Absolutely devastating. There should be no way that he should be able to live this down. The idea that you could, if you can do this and you can get reelected, then what's the point of any of this? What's the point of any of this? Mitch McConnell doesn't get nearly enough credit for how horrible of a person he is and how much damage he's doing to America. And so it's nice that he's now being targeted by the Lincoln Project. Take a look.
What will history say about Mitch McConnell? Well, he spent most of his time making deals for himself, not so much for Kentucky. Mitch didn't have money when he went to Washington 35 years ago. Today, he's one of the richest guys up there. Rich Mitch has a nice ring to it. So what did Kentucky get in the bargain? Well, we're 40th in job opportunity, 45th in education, 43rd in healthcare. Getting the picture? After 35 years, Kentuckians are still waiting for the kinds of opportunities Mitch worked so hard to give himself. With another 6 years of Mitch McConnell, from the holler to the horse farm, we'll still be waiting. And Mitch, he'll just be richer. So what will history say about Mitch McConnell? The same thing many Kentuckians say now. Not a damn thing.
That's pretty good. Yeah.
Rich Mitch suntanning day. That's his life.
Yeah. So that, look, what the Lincoln Project does well is playing on people's emotions with music and things like that and the voices to achieve an end. It seems like a pretty effective ad to me. Mitch McConnell, I think he has done well in some cases for Kentucky in manipulating government to provide benefits to Kentucky. That's certainly true. And he has done very well for himself. That doesn't get pointed out nearly enough. It's true of Mitch McConnell. It should be pointed out about a lot of other politicians as well, honestly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what you do. You're set. Once you're in there, you're set, especially if you're – and there, I mean, built into the first coronavirus relief bill was a carve-out for Kentucky suntan lotion. Like, yeah. Not kidding. That's what he does. And I do like the ADR they did, which is when you're watching like a TV show and like the quality of the sound changes and you're like went in later and put the volume in. They did a different recording session and they couldn't match the audio perfectly. And the one they did ADR on for this was from the holler to the horse farm.
I did notice that as well.
And it's like, I think we need to be more colloquial.
We're not selling it with the voice and the music.
It's terrible, but I respect it. This is all coming from the Lincoln Project, which is itself just a wanton disregard for history and an attempt to rewrite it. Like, they call themselves the Lincoln Project because they called themselves the party of Lincoln.
Yeah.
Even though that, like, in most of those states where you would hear them do ADR like that, those states only recently got Republican governors because all the racists stayed Democrat until they died because Lincoln was a Republican. Mm-hmm. And now, like, what is the party of civil rights? They're trying to convince you that Lincoln would be a Republican today and that Republicans are the party of civil rights. No, but the reason I'm bringing that up is because it just exposes, like, these guys don't care. They're just avid messengers. And in this situation, the message lines up with mine and I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
So go for it.
Can I mention one other thing? So you might have noticed, I'm going to play the first like 10 seconds of that ad one more time, and I want you to take a look at the visuals this time.
What will history say about Mitch McConnell?
Here's the thing. So where he's like, it's sort of weird. It's like in old 80s sitcoms when they do the thing where they introduce each character and they just like walk down the stairs and then they see the camera and they look. And if you're new to American politics, you might wonder, where did they get that video? Why would that even exist? And there's a couple instances of that in the video. Brett, do you remember what I'm talking about, where those came from?
I don't know where they came from, I assume.
So here's where it came from. So there is supposed to be a distinction between the official campaign fundraising apparatus for a campaign and super PACs. They're allowed to exist because you can't coordinate. But the issue there is that then super PACs need B-roll and footage because they want to make ads to support candidates, but mm-hmm. they can't actually coordinate. So Mitch McConnell years ago put out a whole bunch of just B-roll of himself.
No.
Freely available videos. And it spawned this mocking thing on social media called McConnelling, which was that people would film themselves just looking at the camera so that then the super PACs could use that. And it's not coordinated because it's all freely available.
Wow.
But that also means that all the attack ads against you get to use that ridiculous, stupid grin on your face against you, you idiot.
For me, it looks like the beginning of Big Brother, where they're like all the people in the house mm-hmm. are like road rules. It's like, hey, my name's Mitch, and I'm a stuffy legislator from Kentucky. I get my own room, because my farts smell bad.
Oh, jeez. What do they feed turtles? For more than a month now, many of the things that I would have predicted going into this pandemic would not eventually be boiled down to purely partisan culture war sort of considerations. Much of it has. And that's where we're at, where even something as simple as wearing a mask to stop yourself from, you know, infecting someone with coronavirus has become a badge of honor for some. We also have in that movement business leaders who have defied stay-at-home orders to reopen their businesses prematurely that are now being held up by many on the right, especially Fox News, as heroes of the movement. And joining us now to talk about that and the wider phenomenon we're currently experiencing, editor-at-large for Media Matters for America, Parker Malloy. Welcome back to the Damage Report.
It's good to be here.
It's good to have you back on. I've appreciated Media Matters' work during all of this, your recent analysis of how rarely the death count has been mentioned on Fox News over the past few weeks is required reading, I think. It's just mind-blowing. But thank you for joining us. And you had another article about the business leaders that have, you know, like yes. reopened their businesses against the law. Tell us about that, about the rise of this class of folk hero.
Sure. Well, yeah, that's really what it is. It's this idea that they're these conservative folk heroes who are defying the oppressive government, putting these sorts of restrictions in place that keep their businesses shut down. And one that they've been kind of turning to. So there's this woman in Texas named Shelley Luther. So she owns a salon. And so what happened was Governor Greg Abbott in Texas put out an order, just like a lot of other states, shutting down businesses that weren't essential and telling people to please stay home, which is honestly kind of surprising that he did that because he's a very conservative governor. But so anyway, so he does this. Shelley Luther shuts her salon down, but then after a few weeks is just like, I'm just gonna reopen. So she reopens it. She reopens her salon, and then she gets told shut it down by a judge, and she refuses. And so the judge says, if you don't shut it down, I'm going to need to sentence you to jail for contempt of court because you're violating an order. Mm-hmm. And so she still refuses. And at that point, she's sentenced to 7 days in jail. And conservatives now have their new like folk hero in her. And so you had Texas Republicans like Greg Abbott, Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick, the Attorney General Ken Paxton. They're all speaking out on her behalf in favor of her. Now, mind you, again, this was Abbott's own order that she was violating.
Yeah.
Which seems a little odd, but they just kind of went with it. But so what happens here is that she got out and she started appearing on Hannity and Tucker Carlson and stuff like that. It was a big story for a few days, and they've kind of moved on to different figures. But what happened here is very common. It's something you see on the right a lot. You see this need for a Rosa Parks type figure, which it's a ridiculous comparison, but it's one they keep making. You know, where you have someone like Clive and Bundy, or that Duck Dynasty's Phil Roberts, or Kim Davis. The Kentucky clerk who wouldn't issue marriage licenses to gay couples. You know, it's like, so you've got these people who, what they do is they break the law, or they receive some sort of punishment in some way, which was the Duck Dynasty situation where the show got pulled off the air for a couple weeks or something like that. And they act like they're oppressed. They get treated like they're oppressed, and they go on and they make, you know, a ton of money on, you know, appearing on Fox and speaking at conservative events and stuff like that. I mean, Shelley Luther raised $500,000 on GoFundMe. She said she needed to reopen her salon because she needed to feed her family. But then people later found out that she applied for a loan from the government that was, you know, in the CARES Act. She got the money, but she still felt the need to reopen. So it's kind of a scam in a sense.
The incentives are certainly there, that, you know, especially if it's fairly clear that the right is looking for these sorts of figures, as at all times they effectively are. I'm glad that you pointed out that it was Abbott's order that she turned against. I have found it very weird that you have that particular case. You have the general case that Trump wants credit for telling governors to lock down, but also has been going around the country saying that blue states that have locked down are tyrannical regimes, which is sort of weird. But then also you have them saying these businesses should be able to open because these are their businesses. It's their property. They can do whatever they want. But at the same time, they support people saying that businesses shouldn't be able to restrict people who don't wear masks from coming in, which is sort of weird. It doesn't seem like it's their property, their rules. In that case, there really does seem to be a desire to want to have their Corona cake and eat it too in all ways.
Yeah, it's chaos, which I would expect nothing less in a pandemic. You've got basic chaos. There's this thing I keep seeing people say on the right, saying that, Democrats want things to fail, want the economy to tank so it hurts Trump. As though there are governors out here who are like, I'm gonna tank my economy and hurt my own political chances in the future just to hurt Trump. Like, that's not how it works.
No,
but behind all of this, it makes perfect sense to do this thing where they just keep throwing out information and seeing what sticks. Because what they need, you know, the facts of the matter are very, very, very bad for them. You know, you've got 100,000 people who are dead. You've got 40 million people who are now out of work. Little progress has been made on anything, and we don't really know what's coming next. So you need to appeal to their emotions. So as much as someone like Ben Shapiro will say, you know, facts don't care about your feelings, they are focused so purely on feelings, on finding a hero, on finding anecdotal evidence to support how they feel, that they do this stuff. And because otherwise it would be really depressing for them, because it's genuinely depressing for everyone to come face to face with those realities.
And their reaction is so, like, they have to react to the Trump that they had. But if Trump had been strong, if he had put billions into PPE and ventilators immediately, if he'd locked down 2 weeks earlier, if he had done all of what we want, they would have been holding him up as a hero, not someone who's like running the Constitution through a paper shredder. It's just so obviously responding to the political reality and not any sort of honest expression of either their ideology or their values. It just seems so see-through at this point.
Right. Well, and there's another video we made over at Media Matters, which was just a collection of you know, a supercut of times on Fox News recently where they've said, well, every death is tragic, but, and mm-hmm. and that's kind of been the attitude where it's they feel like they need to pay lip service to the fact that, you know, there are a lot of people who are dead now because yeah. of this virus. And it was always going to be the case that some people were going to die from this. I think we all knew this. And if it was a much, much lower, you know, if 10,000 people died, which is obviously still horrible, but if 10,000 people died, no one would be saying Trump is responsible for those 10,000 people, because it would have meant people would have acknowledged that that's the best that yeah. you can do. But this has so clearly been so mishandled that at this point, everyone's just kind of throwing their hands up and hoping for the best.
Yeah. And, you know, so as my last question, I want to sort of get to that a bit, because you all at Media Matters have been doing a great job of tracking Fox News from the very beginning, who have, in one flavor or another, disregarded the pandemic in advance of it, the early calls for more PPE, etc. You can fill it all in. They keep changing it. But the one thing that I find to be scariest isn't necessarily the you shouldn't socially distance, the masks aren't necessary stuff. It's Tucker Carlson night after night doing shows about how I don't think there's any evidence that the lockdowns mattered at all, that they weren't necessary. And it seems to me that if you tell people continuing the lockdowns is tyranny, and also, wink, wink, they were never necessary, what happens if a second wave comes or if another pandemic comes? Maybe Trump loses, you have Biden, and then another Corona 21 or whatever comes someday.
Yeah.
You know, I wonder, have they created an environment where we will be unable to get people to abide by the same sort of things that saved lives this time?
I think the issue with that is that this is it's a carryover from something that happened from the entire culture that was built before this even started. And it's something that I kind of saw in researching a different piece that I was working on about how YouTube misinformation is still out there, where as soon as this thing hit, YouTube wanted to kind of flip a switch and be like, okay, we're going to stop misinformation from spreading. But you can't just do that when you've built a culture that incentivizes conspiracy theories and misinformation and things that are just purposely incendiary. And I think that the Fox News audience is kind of in that headspace where they just, whatever liberals do or the left do, they want to do the opposite of it. We've gotten to that point where now you see businesses saying things like, if you're wearing a mask, you're not allowed in.
100%. Yeah.
I mean,
or there's, you know, a restaurant chain.
That's pointless political stuff.
Yeah, they're saying that, like, libs are going out there wearing masks as virtue signaling. Well, then what the hell are you doing? There was, I forget the restaurant group, but there's a restaurant group in Texas that told its workers they're not allowed to wear masks because it'll send the wrong signal. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, and also the fact that Republicans seem to want to carve out exemptions for businesses to make sure that they can't be sued in case their customers or their employers get sick, which is another example of kind of a cognitive, you know, disconnect, because you wouldn't need that if it was actually safe to go to go outside and return to things. You only need that because you know it's not.
That is a great point. Your first priority would not be the legal protections if that wasn't on the front of your mind that it's probably going to happen and is currently happening in meatpacking plants that are now restricting mm-hmm. access to information about the spread. People need to know what messaging is coming out on the right, but mm-hmm. exposing yourself to all of that could drive you mad. So thank you to Media Matters for doing it for us. Everybody needs to go to Media Matters and benefit from the mental and emotional sacrifice that you're all making on a daily basis. Parker Malloy, thank you, as always.
Thanks so much.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.